Well, welcome to the first inaugural full episode to the Red Line Show with Pacific Exotics. I'm your host, Dylan O'Kell. We have a wonderful guest here today. Have been planning this episode for a while. Welcome, Scott Carlson.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. If you guys follow either of our socials, this has kind of been in planning for a little over a month now, give or take. We were going to do it, and then he went to Hawaii and probably had way more fun in Hawaii than he's having here in a garage speaking into a microphone.
It was a little warmer.
Yeah, way warmer. I think it's like 50 degrees in here right now.
Yeah, it's chilly.
Were you, how was it down there?
Hawaii?
Yeah.
I love Hawaii. Big fan of Maui. We go down there quite a bit. My in-laws have some condos down there, so we get to go down there and play in the sun every once in a while.
Was that for a run, or was that...
No, we're doing separate? Another one April, the whole group. There's like 10 of us from Race Exotics, okay. Single Clutch, I mean, Hattie, Suhail, Papa Smurf. We're all going down there again in April to run a half marathon. This last trip was just a little family trip.
I could never. I'm training for a 10K.
There you go.
That's something. We'll see. That's end of April, April
27th. I actually hate running.
I enjoy the thought of it, and then I do it, and then about 5 minutes in, I'm like, this is why I quit track.
Yeah, I was pretty good in track. The only reason I'm running right now is I've got a jiu-jitsu tournament I'm trying to do that I have to cut like 15 pounds or I'm in the unlimited bracket.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing unlimited.
Those are big boys. I don't even have that good of a reason. I just want to add another something for myself to work toward and give myself a little goal, which I guess is kind of the same reason as you in a roundabout way.
Yeah, mine is specifically like I really do not enjoy running at all, but it's a means to an end, and the end being the jiu-jitsu tournament. Yeah. So that's 100% my motivation.
Do you enjoy, I assume you enjoy the end though, like once you cross the finish line, there's a little bit of like,
there's
you know,
fun.
I'm glad I did that.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah.
And we do like, actually we fly a lot. We travel a lot of different places. Like we're doing all these different things for the channel. We're going over to Factory 5 and touring their facility.
Mm-hmm.
And we signed up for a 5K or something in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going down to the Hennessy factory and we signed up for a Spartan race. It just happens to be in the time when we're down there.
That Spartan shit is like no joke. Is that like the through the mud and stuff like that?
Yeah. I actually do better at those than I do like an actual run because I do a lot of like weightlifting.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm stronger.
Like functional movements and stuff. Yeah.
And so, like, there's some things, like, that people struggle with that I can kind of catch back up because I'm weak in the running department, but, like, when you have to carry, like, 50 pounds of rock on your shoulder.
You're, like, climbing over, like,
you're
walls
climbing obstacles. You're going through mud underwater, freezing water. You're throwing spikes into hay bales. You're doing all this stuff. And if you don't do that, you have to do push-ups or there's like penalties for not making that stuff happen.
See, I would just do the push-ups instead.
Yeah, it just slows you down.
Yeah.
So if you're going for time, it's like get the arrow in the hay bale right now, first throw and keep running to keep your time good. Because I'm just competitive, right? It's just who I am.
Yeah.
So for me, it was like I do better at those kind of things. Percentagely, like they track where you land in your age group. I'm getting a little bit older.
Yeah.
Like there was when I was phasing out of the younger group, my competitiveness was not looking as good percentagely, but then all of a sudden I bumped into the next age group and now I'm doing pretty good.
Oh, yep.
So like I'm at the young end of my age group and, so it's kind of neat. My percent is better. I'm in a like top 10% in the Spartan runs because I think my strength helped me. Like, I mean, there's stuff where you're like pulling a rope, pulling a big bag up in the air. And there's people like that are like pushing, they're upside down and like pushing off of the,
to get the bag up.
Yeah.
There.
To pull them. They're using their whole body weight. And I'm just like, so my size is an advantage in some of the obstacles.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into cars soon, but now I'm just so intrigued. How do you, when you do a Spartan race, what do you do after that? Because I assume you have to shower immediately. Like, you can't just get in a car and go somewhere.
We
like
actually took the Noble up to the last one. And they have, like, hoses and stuff.
Oh, okay.
So, like, you wrench yourself down the best you can. Mm-hmm. It's out, like, there'll be, like, 50 hoses tied up to a main line. Yeah. So there's like tons of people spraying themselves off. It's crazy though, because like you think you're clean.
Oh yeah.
And then by the time it dries, it shows you're
it's
just
all
like,
crusty.
Yeah. And like, it like changes the color. It's kind of crazy, yeah. Especially depending on where you do it.
That's wild. Well, the first question, which is great considering the car you brought here, because I wanted to ask about that.
Yeah.
I'm a slut for Corvette, so I love it. How's the ownership of that been? Because you've had that for, are we coming up on like four
yeah,
months?
Yeah, I would guess about 4 or 5 months. It's been good. We just rolled over. We're at like 4,800 miles. We took it on nice. Daniel Max Legends Rally. Yeah. And it was a lot nicer taking that car than the Testarossa last year.
Oh, I bet.
The Testarossa is iconic. It won best car last year. And we won best car in Daniel Max Rally last year. I think, nobody ever rallies a Testarossa.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it was kind of like, what's this guy doing?
He's bringing a little bit of a showstopper.
1990 Testarossa on a rally where people are like, I mean, when we went through Mexico, some of the guys hit over 200 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And I'm out here in this Testarossa just pulling its hair.
Yeah.
I felt bad for it. I've semi-retired the Testarossa now that I have some other cars that I can kind of beat on. I'll never get rid of it, but it's kind of earned its keep in the, like, for, like, just a casual driver now.
Yeah.
There's no more, like, out there beating on it.
You did, what, donuts in the sand in the Testarossa last year?
Multiple times.
We did a video, or Brandon did a video of it in the snow.
Yeah, Washness, they filmed
it. Wild.
I mean, we've done it. I feel bad for the car. I'm going to, like, do a semi-restoration on it.
Yeah.
We're going to respray the front of the car, or maybe the whole thing, depending if the paint match looks right. But I do want to kind of do like a semi-restoration on it and just make it like a nice special occasion car.
Yeah. I will say I do, as much as some people dog on you for driving your car out in the snow, I fully respect that. And that's like a level of cojones that I don't have.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm glad someone's doing it.
Yeah.
Because there's some things that I want to do with, that I wanted to do with the Miata. Like, I wanted to drive it in the snow.
Right.
And I did. I think it was that same year. I took it out once, and I drove it back home from work. And I'm like, I'm never doing this again.
Yeah, well, so it was calculated, because I get a lot of flack for that, too. But I don't think what we did was really that crazy or bad. I mean, it was dramatic.
And that road's pretty flat,
exactly.
Too. It's not. My road on the way home was...
No, you've got hills and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it was.
And I would never take it to do that.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of calculated risk that was done. Like, a lot of people are like, you're insane and everything. And I'm like, really? It wasn't that big of a deal. We're doing 10 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It was super slow, super controlled. I mean, I spun a couple times.
Yeah.
There was a hill that we attempted to go up. I kind of knew I probably wouldn't make it, but I was like, why not? Mm-hmm. We're here. Whether or not I made it up the hill or not, it wouldn't have really changed much from the, like, risk factor.
Mm-hmm.
And so we attempted it, didn't make it, turned around and went back down.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was all flat. We stayed at sea level. We started at my house. I live on the water, went all the way down the beach drive. We ran down into like the Subaru dealership. The elevation change was minimal, 5-10 feet max. Like, we were sea level the whole way. So I don't think what we did was that crazy. I understand it looks crazy, but it really wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, I had a hill on the way back home pretty close to here where I turned onto it, and it's just immediately like straight up.
Yeah.
And I had Extreme Contact Sports, which is like a high-performance summer tire, but it works in the rain.
Right.
And that was in the Miata, and I got into, like, second gear, and I was like, if I press on the throttle anymore, like, I'm going. So I just had to, like, kind of sit there and...
For sure.
Just, I made it up, but I don't know, my seats might have changed color by the time I got home.
Right.
But I made it home, and I'm like, I'm never, never, ever doing that again.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, we'll pre-plan stuff, like when we know there's going to be snow. Like this year we had, so we were going to do the 458 and the Testarossa again this year, and so we had Petey deliver his car ahead of time,
yeah,
so that if it were to snow, car's ready to go, we're both ready
to go. Yeah,
it
doesn't have to go downhill to get there. Yeah.
So it didn't end up snowing when we were ready to do that, so we didn't end up getting to do that, but
we haven't really got much this year, kind of a bummer.
For sure.
Yeah.
I wanted to get... like my goal this year was to like have the car, like have Isaac maybe drive the Noble while I was in the Testarossa and maybe get them like next to each other sliding.
That'd be cool.
I thought it'd be cool. And now both cars have wraps on it. Like the Testarossa was, that was pre-wrap.
Yeah.
And so like a lot of people don't even know it was my car. I'll run into people and they're like, oh, and I'll bring it up somehow or however the conversation, like, oh, that's your car. So like it would be cool to redo it.
Yeah.
Like post-wrap, but we'll see. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, the one time we did get snow was when Brandon was in Florida. So maybe, Brandon, you just have to go back to fucking Florida and then we'll have someone else film it or something. I don't know.
Right.
And then you can edit it. He'd hate that idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it'll be, maybe next year we take the cars to a higher elevation.
Yeah.
Ahead of time.
Yeah.
And then just I think that one
day it did snow. It was only for one day. I don't even think we got.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there was like remnants the next day, but it didn't.
Well, and it was
down.
Like kind of random.
Yeah.
It didn't give us like time to pre-plan. Because really, like when you're doing this kind of thing, you want to plan it out a little bit. Just because like where the cars can be parked might not be accessible. I mean, even WG is up on a hill.
Yeah.
So. Yep. Yeah, you got to kind of pre-plan a little bit.
Did you, for Legends Rally, did you drive the C8 down there, or was that shipped down with...
Yeah, so we had a six-car trailer, DC Auto, actually. Great company. They were early to all destinations, pickups, drop-offs. Like, they were great to work with. They were cheaper than everybody else I could find. Fully enclosed trailers. They have multiple trailers, so this isn't like a commercial for them, but they did a great job and
were
cheap. So if you need a shipper, I highly recommend them. But yeah, no, so we had a six car trailer tow Luca's FF down, Khaled's GT3 RS, Suhail's SV, and then the Z06 down. So we flew down this year.
All those, like, I know the FF is probably like the most least assuming car. That's got to be like one of the best rally cars.
Yeah, no, it's super comfortable. And it is a very comfortable car. Luke and I switch cars, and like me having kids, I was like, I could maybe drive something like this.
Like that or like a GTC4 Lusso, which is probably, I think those are like double the price.
Right.
Yeah. Same idea.
I like the FF. I'm not a huge fan of the look of the back of it, but from a functionality standpoint, like there's not a lot of cars with that are like in that supercar realm that have four seats.
I like the front end of the FF and the back end of the GTC4 Lusso.
Yeah.
I wish we could have just
got
that, but
maybe Creative Bespoke can build you one or something.
You might be able to. How did the idea of doing donuts in the middle of bumfuck nowhere with Jack come about? I just like opened Instagram one day. I'm like, this is badass.
Yeah.
Is that part of the rally or was
I wish that it was. So last rally we did a year ago, we stopped at places and it's just kind of who I am. I enjoy doing donuts.
Yeah.
Like, and a lot of people say I do it for like clickbait and views. I've been doing this stuff for years. Like if you actually look on the channel, the first video on the channel was me in my old Pantera out doing donuts in the Pantera before I ever had this channel.
It's just fun to do donuts.
Yeah, I just enjoy it. Like, I've done this kind of stuff my whole life, so this has nothing to do with, like, getting views or anything like that. I'm just doing what I enjoy doing. And one of those things is I'm just a little bit wild, right?
Yeah.
And so my point being is last year on Daniel Mack's rally, his last Legends rally, the stops that we made presented opportunities to do that. And so last year I just was like, we stopped and looked at this like dragon that was out in the, like the middle of the desert. And there was like this sandy path around it because same thing, like with the snow, I take calculated risks. Like a lot of people think I'm crazy for beating on the car and like doing all these donuts and stuff. I would never burn out on dry pavement.
Yeah.
No. Like, I wouldn't do it because it's so much harder on the car. And, like, I was getting comments on the Testarossa when I was doing these burnouts. Oh, take it out to the track where it belongs. I'm like, so you want me to break it? Because it's so much harder to track a car than it is to spin the tires in dirt.
Yeah.
Like, there's minimal traction. Yeah. like, I'm not hurting the car at all doing a burnout in the dirt, right? Aside from maybe paint.
Yeah.
But it just looks crazy. So people like get worked up.
They do. And it's a Ferrari. So it's like, oh.
Right. It's a little taboo. It's a classic Ferrari.
Really gets the people going.
Right. So yeah, last year I just saw a few opportunities and it kind of like built this like little, I don't know, like reputation for doing that kind of stuff. And so then this year it was brought up. Unfortunately, we didn't make any stops anywhere that was like a good spot to do donuts because I would have loved to during the rally. So actually this happened. We were like at the hotel and 1K Motorsports was wanting to do it. And I was like, well, you guys know I'm down. Mm-hmm. And so we were originally going to do it the night of the, like the final day of the rally. And there was a really, we got in late. The rally, Legends Rally is a long rally of drive time during the day. And so we got into Vegas late. Like we did down the strip. By the time we were done going down the strip, we only had like an hour to get dressed up. And I mean, we wanted to do dinner and everything.
Yeah.
Prior to the ludicrous performance, I guess, I don't know, concert, whatever. So we didn't have much time to do it the night before. And so the next Jack and I were like, well, let's go tomorrow. He's like, I'm on the way to Arizona anyway. So I'm a early to bed, early up type of guy. Mm-hmm. So Chris and I actually woke up early and we went to Gears and Grinds in Vegas. And then after that, we met up with Jack and Suhail and everybody
finally rolled out of bed.
Yeah, they were a little, they stayed out a lot later than us. Yeah. My wife and I went to bed at like 1:30 in the morning. Ludacris didn't even come on stage till 2:30 in the morning. I'm like, I'm not waiting until 2:30. The rest of them, they were out till 4 a.m. And I can't say that I'm too old for that because I never did that stuff when I was young either, right? I've never drank. I don't drink. And so that, I think you kind of need to like have the like endurance to weather that all-nighter thing. And it's just not built. I'm not built that way.
No, it was kind of like that in Monterey because I was with Jack and their friend group. And I'm like, I want to go to bed.
Right.
But also, like, we're at the Gumball 3000 after party. Like, yeah. I want to, like, enjoy this.
Yeah, I saw you guys made it on the bus.
Yeah, we did.
We waited and waited and waited. Oh, man, it was, that was a shit show.
It was. And so we got there. I assume we were, like, one of the last buses that went up there.
Yeah.
And then we went up there, and then it was great.
Well, you were on one of the last buses that went up there that was somewhat empty. When we showed up after you, the parking lot was full. That breezeway probably had 200 people standing underneath of it. And I waited for 6 buses.
Yeah.
After like the 6th bus, I'm like, screw this.
Well, we didn't even, so we just hopped in. Like, I don't think they gave like Jack an address or where it was
going. No, they didn't give any of us
addresses. So we're like all in there and like half the bus is like drunk already because it's the after party. And then they're like, where are we going? Because it's this long just driveway that goes and goes and goes forever. And everyone's like pulling out their phone and they're like, we don't have cell service.
Right.
Where the fuck, like this is how it ends. Like this is how we die. And then we get there. Jack is a little allergic to alcohol. Asian things, which was good for me because I don't drink. So I'm like, I have someone to talk to this whole time, which was nice, which, I mean, I had fun with other people anyway. Yeah. You can have fun with them, whatever. But it was fun. And then we get ready to leave. And now, like, everyone's drunk at that point. And so we're all, like, everyone's trying to stuff all the buses full. And I think, like, 3 buses are full over capacity, well over capacity. And there's still, like, over half of us waiting to leave. So yeah, there's pictures out there somewhere. I don't think they've been posted for good reason, but like there's people just like laying on the tarmac, like drunk as hell, just like ripping ass and farting. And then like a bunch of other drunk people are like, it was a mess, but it was fun. We, Corvette's having a meltdown over there.
I moved and I bumped the key in my pocket.
We were down there. Eventually, we left. I think Jack made it one bus before me. And then me and my buddy Evgeny tried to hop on another bus. They all were over capacity, except for the one bus that we tried to get on. This right. bus driver was not having it. And we were like the only two people standing up. And he was like, you got to go. I can't take this bus down with you guys standing up. And we're just like, okay, like, I can't really argue with you.
So you had to wait for
so we had to wait for another Man. Bus. It was a mess. The ride back was a lot quicker, as it usually is.
Right.
The bus back was fun, though. Whoever was the bus driver for that had a really good DJ. So we were jamming to some beats on the way back. But yeah, it was fun. That was a night I won't forget, because before that, I think we did that, and then we went to that was the Gumball 3000 party, and then there was an after party for that. Like, everyone went to some Airbnb. Alex Choi was there. Daniel Mack was there. That was the first time I met him.
Yeah.
Which was also quite funny, talking to him, not sober, as, like, everyone's right. not sober. nothing bad, just right. hilarious. And then I don't remember whose idea it was. Someone was like, we should do donuts in the driveway of this Airbnb. And Jack and I are just like, he still had his camera for YouTube. And I'm like looking at the camera. I'm like, it's not our Airbnb. Like,
right.
I can film this or something.
For sure.
So Alex is like out there doing donuts in this. And then we're like, there's no way they're getting this Airbnb next year.
Yeah.
There's no way that thing's getting rented out.
Yeah, no kidding.
No shot.
Well, think of like the damage deposit, or like, I don't know who rented it, but somebody had to.
I'd be curious. Because there's no way you're getting that off the asphalt.
No,
like,
no, that would
I don't know. But yeah, it was a fun time. I will definitely be going this year. Are you going down again?
Yeah, we're going to drive cars down this year. Like, that was the one thing about last year. We rented a car, which was cool.
Mm-hmm.
But we just rented a G-Wagon. It wasn't anything special.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to have our cars down there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a couple of Aventadors, and I'll probably take the Noble if the damn thing runs.
Come on, get on that, Isaac.
Right. Yeah, no, it's, right now I'm actually fighting this little electrical issue. I took it through a touchless car wash.
Mm-hmm.
And right when it started spraying, I don't really use those very often. I kind of forgot that they spray water from underneath.
Yeah.
So right when I drove over and it started spraying, I was like, crap, and kind of accelerated out.
Mm-hmm.
It has full pan underneath of it for aerodynamics. So I was kind of hoping, okay, maybe nothing happened. And the car made it like a mile, and it started sputtering and missing. Mm. And I pulled over, called the previous owner, was kind of chit-chatting. They actually had a jumper wire in the door pocket for this situation, because apparently it happens like when it's raining up too.
Rains.
I don't necessarily know that it was from when it was spraying up, because it also has vents across the top of the engine deck. Somehow water got in and shorted out the relays for the fuel pump. So I pulled the relay out. It was dripping water. And I put that jumper wire in and drove it. Mm-hmm. So I've been letting it dry out, hoping that I don't have to replace a bunch of electrical.
Yeah.
But that's the situation with the Noble right now. That's why I didn't go on the Legends rally. I've lost a little bit of trust in it for like big trips.
Mm-hmm. British car things.
Yeah, it's a British car, 100%.
Yeah.
And British cars are look at all the McLarens and it's not even new British. It's British.
It's all of them.
It's
yeah.
forever. Like all my 60s Triumphs and stuff I've had. I mean, I've got a 66 Bonneville right now with they call it the Prince of Darkness, Lucas wiring, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, the headlights don't work. All the wires are fried. Like it's the Brits should not be allowed to touch anything electrical.
Subcontract that to anyone
else. Anybody.
Anyone else.
Anybody. It's just I don't understand. It's crazy.
Did the Lotus ever have electrical issues?
Yeah, that's total Lotus thing.
I feel like I vaguely remember
the speedometer just randomly working.
It was the fuel gauge sometimes when.
Yeah, because the whole head unit would just disconnect.
Yeah.
And
sure, because why not?
Yeah, well, and the bad thing about that is it happens with every Lotus, Elise, Exige, any of that model Lotus.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't really know how many miles are on the car. So when you're shopping for one, you have a general idea, but you don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
It could have triple the miles on it, and somebody was just driving it around without the odometer working.
Yeah.
So, British car things for sure.
Do you, now I'm curious, because we're on the Lotus talk, and I love Lotuses.
Yeah.
Is there still any idea of one
joining
your collection in the future?
Yeah, this spring I'd like to pick up an Evora. And I, the only reason I like the Evora, I don't actually want an Evora for the Evora,
mm-hmm.
but I want an Evora because it's a Lotus, it's mid-engine, they're neat little cars, but mainly so because it's a four-seater.
Mm-hmm.
So I can go pick my daughters up from school in it.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I would go Exige every day of the week. Mm-hmm. Like, I love light, and the Evora is heavy, mm-hmm. like, compared.
Compared to an Exige.
Right.
Yeah.
And the whole thing for me is, like, Lotus should be light.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I got the Noble. It's because the Noble's like a Lotus on steroids, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would never need another Lotus Elise or Exige just because I have the Noble. And the Noble's, like, leagues above a Lotus Exige, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's way faster, handles better, tighter suspension in every way.
Really?
Oh, it's not even a competition. Like, it really is not even in the same realm whatsoever. Like, the Noble is insane.
I'm going to need a ride-along at some
point. Yeah, for sure. Well, and then especially because we, like, have a newer, bigger engine in it. So we're, like, originally the Noble's 400 horse.
Mm-hmm.
Before I blew the engine up in it, it was 525. And it would do, like, third gear rolling burnouts. I mean, it was insane.
That's stupid.
At 90 miles an hour, you could light the tires up.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do that in a Lotus Exige,
what
right?
What size are they in the rear? They're not small.
Yeah, no, they're only like 315s, I think.
Only?
Yeah, but like that car right there is running 345s.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, it is a, for that kind of horsepower, I feel like it's like a small tire. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, like I said, we're, when we run the boost up, because we haven't run the boost up from the break-in, because it's a brand new engine.
Yeah.
So it's probably only in the 400 horsepower mark, like right now, but it's kind of built and tuned to be running 580 horse is what we're shooting for. Mm-hmm. And it was 525 with the smaller engine. Now we've got the bigger engine. And that's kind of what we're shooting for is 580 horse. And so for 580 horse, 315s aren't really that big.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if like weight would have a little bit to do, because I assume that car, I mean, that car weighs more than the Noble.
By
so
quite a bit.
If you have more weight, like pressing down on that tire, it's less likely it would just spin, maybe, because there's more on it too.
Totally.
Maybe.
Which, don't get me wrong, like you have to want the tires to spin in the Noble. It's very, like, it's not just like out of control.
Yeah.
Like you have to like be spooling the turbos up on purpose to get them to burn out.
Mm.
So it's a very controllable car. Like I'm not talking like it's too much horsepower.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a such thing as too much horsepower. It's all throttle control, right? Like, I'm a motorcycle guy. Like, I've tracked Ducatis, and people are like, oh, it's too big of a bike, 1,100cc Ducatis. And it's like, well, no, it's just your wrist. It's how much you give it. Sure, the bigger bikes have less room for air.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Far less room for air, like, is like a 600.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can kind of be sloppy and maybe not have very good control of the throttle and you'll be okay. A big bike, you just barely bump it and you're down.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there's no such thing as too much power. It's just, do you have the ability to control the power?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I believe the same thing for cars, because there's times where, like, accelerating in the higher gears where you, it's not going to burn out. You're not going to lose control. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, if I had more power, I could walk more stuff, right?
Yeah.
Not that the Noble's made to walk stuff, but it's kind of fun anyways. I enjoy the track, but I also enjoy pulling on the freeway.
Yeah. Yeah, the Evoras, I never really liked them all that much until I did Express Rally.
Yeah.
And Will Poff brought his purple one, ripped that car. It's gone. I was like, wow. I think that was the first time I'd actually like seen like a newer Evora, the facelifted one, in person. I was like, this is so much better in person than in the pictures.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize their specs either, because we're just like driving uphill and all of a sudden I'm like, he's gone. Like, what the hell?
They're not slow, especially if you get like the Evora 400 or something, which I think Will's was.
I think it was.
A GT.
A GT, yeah. Because I think the GT came after the 400.
Did it?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, so no, there's some that are pretty quick.
Yeah.
But from my, like, like, to put that into perspective, the Evora is what, 3,200 pounds?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly, but
and the Exige is 1,850 pounds.
Yeah.
So at 3,400, I mean, it's a lot heavier.
Yeah.
Like a lot.
I think Exige or Elise is.
I think
possibly Elise, going to be one of my next
cars. I think you should totally get one. I think the Exige is the best bang for the buck entry level supercar, hands down, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'll argue that till I'm blue in the face. Like, it handles amazing. Mm-hmm. It's a driver's car. It's an enthusiast car. It's going to maintain its value.
Oh yeah,
they're not going down.
No,
they're cheap to keep on the road. They're cheap to maintain. They're super reliable. That Toyota engine in it, it will force you to become a better driver just because it doesn't have the horsepower to go faster on the track.
No.
So you have to become a good driver, right?
To use it, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, it makes a... Like, anybody that owns an Elise, I look at them as a real car person, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not like they just went to the local dealership and said, hey, I've got a bunch of money. I just sold my Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Sell me a cool car, no, right?
You're like willing to crawl up into the fetal position to get inside of your car every morning.
Well, and you even know what it is, right? Like, a lot of people don't even know what they are.
Yeah.
Like, they've seen them, but they don't really know.
Yeah.
Because once you drive one, it's like, like, it's a disease, man. It just like...
Well, that's like when I drove yours. So for everyone who doesn't know, he did have a red Elise. And I had my Miata at the time, and you had tried to get me to drive it. And I think the first time I was like, no, because I had still had the Miata, and it was like, at that point, that was still the most fun car I'd ever driven. Yeah. I had a buddy who let me borrow his R8 V10 Plus for prom, so I had that for 3 days, and I drove the shit out of it. And it was still like, I got the Miata back, and I was like, I missed this thing.
For sure.
So I was like, but part of me, like in the back of my head, I was like, I'm worried if I drive this, it's going to be more fun than the Miata. Like, I don't want to do that to myself. And then, and then you listed it for sale, and then we were doing some drive or something with some friends, and then you offered to let me drive it, and I was like, I should take you up on that before it's gone. And then I did, and I never drove in anything since that's been more fun than the Elise.
Yeah. It's, like I said, it's not the quickest car.
No.
But I would argue it's the most entertaining. And it actually, from an entertainment standpoint, I enjoy it more than the Noble.
Mm-hmm.
It's nowhere near as fast as a Noble, but it's not always about being fast, right?
Yeah.
Top off, hair blown in your wind blown in your hair. Like, it's just, it's fun.
It is.
Right? Like, the Elise and Exige are, I would totally like to have another one someday.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, just bone stock. I don't want crazy horsepower out of it because it's not like, it will never be what the Noble is, and so I don't need two Nobles.
Yeah.
But it has a fun factor and a carefree factor that I don't think that I don't think is even possible out of the Noble. Yeah. Like, I have a roof on the Noble.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that cuts away the convertible feel of the Elise.
It's a whole different feeling, yeah.
So it just feels more fun and playful and just like a... But it's cool, too. Like, I'm not a Miata guy. Like, I don't know. I know you do. I know you like them. That's cool.
Yeah.
To each their own.
I'll have another one someday.
Yeah. But for me, I just like that. I like the mid-engine. I'm not really a big fan of much that's even front-engine. Like, that's one of my... Like, I know there's a lot of cool cars that are front-engine. They just don't do anything for me. It doesn't feel right to me, like, from a performance standpoint. Like, look at how long it took Chevy to build the mid-engine Corvette, right? Like, the engine belongs in the rear.
And they had a guy there wanting to do that, like, since, what, like, the C4 or even before that,
Yeah, they built one out of, I think, the C3, C4 maybe. I don't remember which one it was. They actually had it down at Monterey at Laguna Seca on display.
Mm-hmm. The one event I didn't go to.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. But they already built one. But the problem was, is it was going to cost like the consumer like $300,000 to buy.
Yeah, which back then was like
then was a lot of money.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it never happened, the mid-engine Corvette, until the C8. And look at it, right? It's like, it's an amazing car. Like, but and so I have this like stigma in my head that like if you want performance, the engine needs to be in the rear. That's just like. It's just like hardwired in me.
Yeah.
We went out to the track in my first Pantera years ago, and I had a buddy. He was in like a 01 Viper, and like the 01 Viper couldn't keep up with my 72 Pantera in the twisties.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, 1972 to 19 or to 2001, like the Viper, I don't know. I just, mid-engine is where it's at.
I love Vipers too. The Viper's a cool car. So many cars that I have little soft spots for.
Totally. And yeah. I have a soft spot for a Viper. I honestly would love that car, like an 01 GTS. I would love an 01 GTS. I really like that body. It's a neat looking car. But it would be more like a novelty purchase rather than like, hey, this is like, because the engines, I still stand by my, the engine belongs in the back. Like weight over the rear wheels. Like I just.
So my thought is eventually for the, whenever I end up getting a three car combo, since I only have the S4 at the moment, the S4 is great. I think it's like one of the best dailies you can get for the money.
Yeah.
At that. At 20K, a four-door for like 450 wheel horsepower.
Right.
It's great, and I haven't had horrendous issues with it.
I'm
tackling little problems here and there, but there's nothing like dramatically wrong with it. And I think it's a lot of car for the money. I don't really know what else you can get that does all those, that it does so good. But I'm also like, every time the sun comes out, I'm like,
you don't have kids. You don't need four doors.
But I'm like, so I want another two-door roadster next, eventually. I need to get that itch back in. So I'm like, if I keep this, because my first thought was like, oh, I'll just get another Miata. But I'm like, if I'm keeping the S4, there's no need for the Miata. I would just get a Lotus.
Right.
Like, I don't need to meet in the middle.
I would get rid of the S4
and just get the Lotus. I know you would.
Like, you don't need four doors. What do you need four doors for?
I have used those back seats quite a few times.
But do you have to use them?
No.
Okay. It seems like Lotus is the answer, 100%.
I knew we were going to get there. So my thought is,
just make your friends drive themselves.
Exactly. I feel like my ultimate three car combo would eventually be the S4, keep that, Elise or Exige, whichever one ends up being the one at the moment. And then I'd like to have a fun off-roader at some point. Who knows? Maybe I do that and then realize it's not for me, but I feel like it'd be a fun itch to scratch. I really like Kai's GX 470. I feel like something along those lines to have like those three cars.
Right.
Like, the perfect daily, a fun two-seater roadster to canyon carve, and a nice like SUV to do some off-roading stuff in.
Why does it got to be an SUV?
It doesn't need to be. We could, god damn it, buy another Elise and lift it on like 33s.
That truck right there. That truck has got like a cult following too.
It does, but I'm also like, I would hate to like off-road and abuse that thing. It's under 100,000 miles, and it has like that family.
But there's a 94. How much are you going to spend on something like Kai's GX?
I don't know, and it doesn't need to be that either. But just
right.
Like,
but what I'm saying is like,
yeah,
your money's best spent right there.
Yeah,
you're sitting right in front of your off-road vehicle. For those of you that don't know, there's a Toyota.
It's a 94 Toyota with a four-cylinder 22RE with a manual, bone stock,
four-wheel drive, super clean. Yep.
Just has
he's already sitting in front of his off-road vehicle.
I don't think I'd ever want to take that off-road. I'd feel so bad.
Wouldn't you feel bad like taking the GX off-road?
No.
Why? It's worth more than that.
Yeah, but there's not like family history to that. I think that's part of it too. Like that was my grandma's. Like I learned stick on it. My grandpa.
Well, you
grandpa's
can take care of it. I've taken my Raptors 4x4. There's not one dent in it.
I could too,
so
but
it's
like,
all if like you just. Like
it's like the same reason Tyler's not off-roading the Ford pickup.
There's multiple ways of off-roading. You can still have fun.
You can.
Because I do a little bit. I mean, I've had multiple Raptors. I've had multiple Jeeps. Like, I do a little bit of off-roading. And I don't ever bump into trees.
I think if I got an off-roader, I would, like, want a car where I don't give a fuck about.
Yeah.
So, like, Tyler, guy who has that Ford pickup, he just bought, like, a 95 or 93 of this. Beat to shit.
Right.
Like, he calls it his raisin because it's dented so much. Like, as a joke, he'll pull up over here and then kick the side of it when he gets it. And I'm like, that's perfect. Fucking take that to who ya.
Yeah.
Scratch the shit out of it. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Whereas, like, if you had something nice, and maybe GX is too nice, because that, right. I mean, that's, like, nearly brand new, but, like,
yeah,
something where you just didn't give a crap about.
Right.
But
yeah. It's just an expensive hobby.
It is.
I feel like the juice isn't worth the squeeze in the off-roading department. That's why I'll do a little bit of it in my...
I kind of see that. And then part of me is like, but I do kind of want to scratch the itch.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of want to learn that the hard way.
Right.
We'll see.
I don't know. I think that's fun. Right. That's right up your alley.
I think that's going to stay in the family forever.
Well, no, I'm saying it should, right? Yeah. But you've already got the truck. And so take it out into the trails and just be careful.
Yeah.
It's not that much more fun bumping into shit than being careful.
True.
Because it's still fun. It's still engaging. Like, you still have to pay attention. Like, it's not like it's not fun.
Yeah.
Like, you can still do some burnouts and, like do some stuff. That would be
a lot of fun to take up to Snoqualmie.
Yeah.
We took my buddy Travis. He took his Lariat up there. And then my dad got a new Canyon AT4X with a little bit of a lift and new tires up there. So we went up there. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I've taken my Raptor all the way to Mud Lake.
Mm-hmm.
I just went a little bit slower than everybody else, and I didn't hit one tree. I didn't damage truck at all. Mm-hmm. Like, if you look at my truck, I've got 190,000 miles on it, and I've jumped it probably no less than 40 times. Like, I mean, I've put the truck to the test, right? But you can't tell because I'm careful, right? Calculated risks.
Yeah,
and so. I've never had the urge to have a truck that I can run into a tree. A, I don't want to drive a bunch of shit around.
Yeah.
Like, but B, I can have basically the same fun just being careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that. I can see that.
I don't know. That's the truck there. You already got it. You're sitting so much in front of it.
And the funny thing is, like...
You could put a mild lift on it. That's not damaging it. You can always pull the lift out.
That's reversible. Yeah.
Totally. You can always pull a lift out, and you could put some different tires on it that are a little meatier, and just have fun with it, and don't run into stuff.
Yeah.
Right? When you see the big stump sticking out at you, drive around it instead of through it.
That thing's so much fun. It's not an engaging truck to drive. It's not inherently fun, per se, but, like, I don't know. There's something about, like, the charm of, like, an old 90s Japanese pickup. Like, we got it
for
back.
Some people.
Yeah.
I like the big V8. I mean, I've got a supercharged Raptor.
I'd love to have, like, a TRX someday.
That truck,
would be a lot
of fun. I can respect that it's clean,
but
it does nothing for me.
Well, my mom, unfortunately, got in an accident, and so that's my grandma's, and she has a BMW SUV that she dailies once a month. And so she brought this over, kind of for mom to drive in the meantime. And I saw it here, and I'm like, oh, I can't wait to drive this thing again. So Travis and Tyler were over, and we just had some errands to run. I think it was right before the Colors event for Avance. So we had to go get some 80s and 90s themed outfits. So I was like, this is perfect. We're going to go take this shopping. And we just blasted Freebird down the freeway in our 94 pickup with the windows down, with crank windows.
Yeah.
There's just a charm, but it sucks to get in because your knee hits the steering wheel every time. It's not comfortable. It's not ergonomic.
Yeah.
I guess in all of the elements, it kind of sucks to drive, but it's fun. I don't know. There's just...
I get it. And fortunately, I do like driving. Yeah. I'm glad that I enjoy cheap stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I've got the biggest smile on my face getting it, like, finding some little garage, find 64 Triumph Spitfire.
Yeah.
With rusted floors and, like, the headlights don't work.
Yeah.
And I just have the biggest smile on my face pulling out of their driveway.
There's
right?
something that those cars give to you that, like, a C8 can't.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I actually prefer, like, it's weird. I mean, I have a lot of old cars because I like old cars.
Yeah.
Right? Like, my most entertaining car is probably the Daytona. Mm-hmm. That thing is raw. It's noisy. You smell like fuel. My wife hates it because... I get out of it smelling like gas, like, but I love it. Yeah. So, like, I'm actually kind of glad I enjoy old shit. Mm-hmm. Like, I've got a bunch of old Ford trucks out of the, like, 1940s and 1950s, and I love them. Like, they do 35, 45 miles an hour tops downhill with the wind at your back.
Yeah.
But I still just like, I love the, I don't know what it is about them. I just enjoy driving certain ones. Because there's others that just don't do anything for me either. But I'm glad that I still get excited over cheap stuff because I don't make a ton of money to afford a brand new Aventador or 765 every time I'm feeling like I need a new car. So I can get those little fixes buying cheap cars.
Well, now that you've mentioned quite a few cars that you have, I almost brought a notepad down here because I was curious and I forgot. I'm starting to question if it's even worth doing this little exercise. See how many cars that you can recount that you've owned, or is it so high that you don't even, like, there's so many.
Well, so that's like a, there's a couple answers. So during high school, so I bought my first car when I was 12 years old. It was a 64 Impala, and I had to have one because of Eazy-E, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre. Like, I grew up in that era.
So you did it when you were 12?
Those were the music videos.
Yeah.
And I had actually been saving my money up for a little motorcycle because I started riding motorcycles. I got my parents bought me a 1974 Honda 50 MR, so it was a manual transmission one, little Honda 50, when I was 3.5. So I've been riding motorcycles, and so my cousin, he was always buying new bikes and getting, and he was a year and a half older than me, and so he was always getting the newer, better bike, and so I had been saving my money up to buy a bike. So I started mowing lawns at like 10 years old. I wanted a new motorcycle, and from 10 to 12, I saved up $600. At 12 years old, I then kind of changed what I was interested in and wanted a car, mainly because of those music videos and stuff, right? It was the car. 64 Impala was like, I mean, it was in every single music video. It was the car. And so the guy, Stretch, he actually is a manager now, but he used to just be a tiller at the West Bay Auto Parts. And he had one for sale for $600. Well, he sold it to me for how much I had on me, which was $600.
Mm-hmm. How much was would $600 have been nowadays, if you were to guess?
I don't know. I mean, maybe double that.
Yeah.
Like by the time inflation. I mean, this would have been in about 1999.
Okay.
So 24 years ago. I would say that's probably a safe $1,200. Yeah. Maybe $1,500 for like to buy the, well, and the Impalas have gone up like crazy. So you couldn't get one of those for that kind of money. But yeah, so 12 years old, bought the Impala, and I couldn't really do anything. I mean, my dad let me drive it down the street once. Like, I remember I was like, this is so crazy. Like, I drove it down past, like, my old elementary school.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty neat. It was like a real, I think we should do that with our kids more often, like, show them that they can do something. Because so many kids nowadays don't think that they can do anything at all, right? Like, they grow up thinking, oh, well, I can only do what I they have their mind so closed down, right? So at 12, bought the car, I cleaned it up. I remember, like, I could maybe dig some pictures up of it. Like, I washed it, it was like so covered in moss and stuff, like you couldn't see through the windows. Like, literally there was moss growing all over it. It was crazy. So I cleaned it up. Basically, all I did was clean it up, pull the carpet out. Like, the carpet was toast. I just made it presentable, not much a 12-year-old can do. And I ended up selling it. And just a few months later, because I was like, well, I can't do anything, right? I can't drive it. I'm not old enough to drive it. I'm not old enough to fix it. I don't know how to fix anything. And so I just flipped it.
The realization had set in that it was a lawn ornament
at
that moment.
And so I sold it for $1,200. I was like, wait a second.
We got something here.
I just doubled my money in a month. All I did was wash a car. And there, and so like it, like I was like, all the lawns I've mowed, I'm like, I've mowed lawns for 2 years for the same amount of money I just made washing a car.
In a couple months,
And that's what started me flipping cars. And so starting about 12 years old, I sold the Impala. I bought a 67 Chevelle, did the same thing with a Chevelle. Then I bought a 69 Mustang. The engine went out right after I bought the Mustang. And then I bought a 70 XR7 Cougar for the engine. That's actually the engine that made me fall in love with the 351 Cleveland. So then, which is why I went into Panteras. But I've had, and I'm not like making numbers up. I've flipped about 400 cars. For like, what I mean by that is like, there'd be cars that I would buy that I would never even drive. Mm-hmm. Like, so because my dad's buddy owned a roofing company, like when I was trying to fix these cars up, my dad said, well, it's time to go to work, right? If you want to make some real money to fix these cars up, you need to go to work. And so on the weekends, I was up on roofs, my dad's buddy's company. And so I'd be up on roofs and I'd be up high and I could see 10 houses' backyards, right? And so I'd see cars in people's backyards. I'd just go knock on the door and say, hey, you've got a 71 Mustang in the backyard, or you've got a 69 Charger back there, you want to sell it. And so
what age would this have been at?
I started doing that at about 14 years old. Okay. I was in junior high, and every weekend and all summer long, starting at about 14, I was up on the roof. And I actually, like, I couldn't afford a lot of them, right? Because I was 14 years old. And I was finding, like, 440 CUDAs, 1970 CUDAs in people's backyards. Well, a 14-year-old kid can't afford that.
Yeah.
And so what I was doing is I was actually writing them all down. Every single one I found, I'd write down the address, what the car was, and a phone number or contact information for the people. And so I was flipping cars. I was buying them as I could afford them, and flipping them. I mean, I've had 13 69 Mustangs. I've had 4 69 Camaros. I've had 3 68 Camaros. I've had many Chevelles, Novas, Impalas. I mean, I've even had stuff like one time I bought a car. I needed a Mustang engine. One of my 66 Mustangs, I blew the engine up in. And so I ran into this guy and he was selling, he was like, we were out playing basketball in my buddy's cul-de-sac. And the guy was like out putting a for sale sign in a Gremlin, I don't even know what year it was, 1980 Gremlin or something. Mm-hmm. And, he put a for sale sign in it and he wanted like $300 for it. I'm like,
I'll take it.
And he goes, it said on the for sale sign, 302 engine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh shit, I need that engine for my Mustang. So I bought the car off the guy for the 302 engine.
Mm-hmm.
I drove it halfway home and I was talking to my dad. I stopped at a buddy's house, called my dad, was like, oh, just picked up this Gremlin for $300. It's got the engine for my Mustang. And he goes, that you can't put that engine in your Mustang. It's an AMC motor.
Which was Chevy related at the time.
AMC.
Right?
No. Yeah. AMC was...
It was its own?
So AMC was an old car manufacturer. They're out of business. They're gone, which way before your time.
Mm-hmm.
But they made like the Javelin. Yep. They made a few cars that were... Mm-hmm. They were a quirky brand, but it was an AMC 302, not a Ford 302. And like, I didn't know.
Yeah,
I was
at the time,
a kid. I mean, I was 16 at the time.
Yeah.
And so I literally, like, I was at my buddy's house when I talked to my dad, and he goes, you can't use that engine. Get rid of that car or something. And I'm like, I'm sitting there, we're playing Halo at my buddy's house. And he's like, well, I'll buy it off you. How much you want for it? I'm like, $600. So I literally like bought the car, drove it 6 miles to go play some Xbox and sold it for double the money.
And
so I've had so many like weird little stories like that, which is like when people hear I've had over 400 cars, like bullshit. I'm like, I've got 32 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not hard. If you're moving them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so there'd be other times where, and so it was interesting. So all that work of saving all those addresses and stuff paid off in the long run, because after like 5 years of selling cars, I ran into these guys up in Monroe. They were a couple brothers and they were like classic car. They were a classic car dealership. And so throughout high school, they would call me and say, hey, I need a 69 Charger 440 car. Do you know where one's at? And I'd go through my, like, I had 8 pages front to back college rule, right?
You're like an agent for
hundreds
them.
Of cars.
Yeah.
So I'd go through my folder and see what I had, and I'd find a couple, and I'd be like, I've got 3 to pick from. I'll show them to you. And so they were giving me 10%, whatever they paid for it. Mm-hmm. Whether it's profitable or not, they just cut me 10%.
Yeah.
And so I did that. I mean, I sold a lot of cars doing that too. And you know, it was interesting. I remember the first time I walked up, it was actually over in Bremerton. I was doing a roof. Cause at the same time, like, I'm just a go-getter, right? Like, my first business I opened, I was 16 years old. It was a scuba diving company. SUDS, Scott's Underwater Diving Services. I'd clean boat bottoms, replace zincs, that kind of stuff.
That's a good business name.
Yeah.
Kinda like that.
Right?
SUDS. Yeah.
But anyway, so in between selling cars, I was still roofing. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was probably like 17-ish, 18, when the market kind of changed on making money with these old cars. I walked up. I was up on a roof. The neighbor had like a 72 coupe Mustang, right? Nobody gives a shit about a 72 coupe. They still don't. And this is 20 years later. So in 20 years, they haven't even gone up in value. They really weren't worth anything 20 years ago.
Yeah. They're like the ugly duckling.
Yeah.
Mustang.
Yeah. And they had a lot of emissions. They were low horsepower. They were just not a good car. They were ugly. They were big. They were heavy. They had nothing going for them. Well, I walked over, knocked on the door, and this probably like 70-year-old lady opens the door and says, "Oh, yeah." And I go, "Hey, I saw you had a Mustang in your backyard. I was wondering if you want to sell it." And she goes, "Yeah, I've been thinking about selling it. I just saw one of those sell at Barrett Jackson for $80,000. And I'm like,
and you're like,
"Ma'am,
oh, shit.
The car you saw was at that price, 80 grand was a lot."
Yeah.
Like, we're talking 2004, 2005.
Mm-hmm.
80 grand in 2004, 2005, you're finding a numbers matching GT500.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
I go, "Ma'am, the car you saw, I can guarantee you, is not what you have in your backyard." But it was interesting because it was almost like a light switch. As soon as Barrett Jackson, all these big auction houses, got a lot of traction on TV, the industry just changed completely.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you couldn't make money on these cars. Like, there's a DZ302. It's still sitting there in Tacoma. 69 Camaro DZ302 car. It had a tree growing through the trunk. And the guy, same thing. "Oh, that car on Barrett Jackson would sell for $70,000. Yeah. And I go,
"No.
Your car has a tree growing through the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. You're not, that isn't the same car." But that's when I quit flipping cars. Mm-hmm. When it became a hassle, like, before it was like, I was doing it so early before it like became a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just kind of stumbled into it and there was a lot of money in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it was just, everybody was doing it. Everybody was, I mean, I've bought 69 Mustangs fastbacks for $1,500 and drove them home.
Yeah.
Like, good luck.
Not doing that anymore.
Like, literally drove it home for $1,500.
Yeah. Even like with inflation.
Yeah.
Probably,
for sure.
It'd be tough.
I bought a 69 Mach 1 Raven black on black with wood grain, like a high optioned 69 Mach 1 with wood grain clock in the passenger footwell, like the whole nine,
mm-hmm.
for $5,000. Drove it home for $5,000.
Yeah.
Like, good luck.
Not happening today.
And so, yeah, it's changed quite a bit, which, like, if you look at my cars, I don't have any because I think the muscle car market kind of like overinflated compared to other cars. Like, I don't think you're getting the bang for the buck that you that you used to be or that they should be.
Mm-hmm.
They've come down recently. I've been looking around for like another 69 Mustang. I'd love to do like a resto mod on one, or maybe even buy one done. But they have come down in price. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a 69 Mach 1 right now for like $35,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that a couple years ago, that was 70.
Okay.
So like they've dropped quite a bit into a price where I'm like, okay, that car's probably worth that. So there might be a old muscle car coming to the channel here soon.
Okay. Do you think they dropped kind of just with the car market as a whole or just different?
Combination of both. The car market's dropping right now, but I think the muscle car market was overinflated.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's another thing. Like, the muscle, all these old cars, the guys that, like, grew up on them and stuff are dying.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, especially the older ones, the 30s, 40s, and 50s cars. The generation that was in love with those cars are on their deathbeds, right? The baby boomers and stuff, they're like getting to that age where a car doesn't mean anything to them. Well, who's buying them?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because most young kids, like the younger generation, no offense, you're in the younger generation, they don't know how to fix points.
No.
They don't know how to adjust a dwell in a distributor.
Yeah. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Right exactly.
And
right?
I'm into cars.
Yeah, you're into cars. And it's something that's like so foreign to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an old car guy, and I don't even want to work on them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like this movement in the whole society that these old cars, like, they're so specialty. You can't just even take them to a local shop. Mm-hmm. Who's working? Like, you're not taking it to the Ford dealership.
Yeah, no, you got to know a guy.
Right. Like, you can't be like, oh, here's my 70 Chevelle with the 454 in it and take it to Gilcrest. They're going to be like, get out of here.
Like, we haven't seen one of these in the last 20 years.
Exactly. No. And so from just like a usability, and then these old cars, there's always something wrong with them, right? Like, there's always the ball joints are going out or the bushings or... it's leaking here, it's leaking there, the speedometer quit working. I mean, they're old, right? Like, I mean, they're 70 years old. And yeah, so there's always something breaking.
I shot some cars for Barrett Jackson, not going to say for who, but it was like the same thing. Like, there were these old, like from the 30s even, some of them. And they were like, yeah, we can't, like, these shouldn't go on the freeway because they might not make it back.
Right.
And there were like a couple times where it was like, oh, something happened. And
for sure.
I like that was the first time I'd ever spent like actual quality time around like old trucks like that and like actually enjoyed it. And I was like, oh, that's a bummer. And they were like, yeah, it's just how old cars go. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, you're used to this. Like, this is a little bit, because I was like, oh shit, it's broken. And they were like, no, this is,
it's typical.
It's just how it goes. And
yeah,
like, okay. And
well, then, you have to be almost like a mechanic yourself to own one of those old cars. Like, I've replaced master cylinders on the side of the road in my Panteras. Like, luckily a Pantera, the engine's right there, so you don't have to crawl underneath anything. Like, it's a fairly easy replacement, but I did on the side of the freeway. Lost my clutch pedal, and it was the master cylinder, and there was a store down the road, and like, I will say this about old cars, it doesn't need to be the exact part. There's a lot of play and forgiveness, so you can usually fudge something together. And the master cylinder on the Pantera is like literally right there. There's two bolts holding the little bracket down, a little cotter pin that's holding the plunger. Like, it was like 10-minute fix. But if you didn't know how to do anything,
you're screwed.
You're done.
Yeah.
Right. I've replaced starter solenoids in parking lots. I used to wrestle in high school, and my high school car was a 69 Mustang. And I've walked out of my wrestling tournament at night. Right. It's like an all day tournament. Now it's dark. And my car won't start. Right. And I had to replace the starter solenoid right on the side of in the parking lot. So like, you have to have a little bit of like mechanical savviness. There's a lot of things, like the brakes don't break as good. Like, if I've lost alternators while driving and the headlights are getting dim, and if you don't know any better, like, you don't know to turn the radio off and all the parasitic.
Or you just think your headlights are dying or something.
Yeah. And so, like, if you don't know this stuff, like, I drove halfway home with no headlights on because I was like, well, if I keep running my headlights.
Yeah, it's going
to
die.
It's going to die sooner. Yeah. And so, like, you have to be, like, a little unorthodox to drive old stuff for sure. So it's not for the faint of heart by any means.
Do you still, what old cars do you have now? I know you recently, did you just pick up a Mercedes?
Actually, I sold the Mercedes. Yeah. It was just German cars, man. I'm afraid of them. There's so many little things with it. Like, I'd be driving down the road and the passenger, because it had a seat in the seats in the back, there was like a big space between the seat, the passenger seat and the back, like a pillar, I guess, whatever you'd call it. And so it has this little ejector that pushes the seatbelt out to you so you can grab it. And it would just randomly be like, beep, 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 drive down the road with nobody in the passenger seat. That's trying to hand somebody a seatbelt to nobody. No just weird little things. The top didn't want to go down because the back right window wouldn't roll down. And it had a, like, built into the system, if the window don't roll down, the top won't go down. It just, it's German.
A lot of quirks, yeah.
I think German cars, my thing on German cars is when they're new, they're the best car in the world. I think the Germans build an amazing car. But when they're old, they're boat anchors.
Yeah.
I think there's a, they, they over-engineer everything. And mm-hmm. That's kind of like why I like domestic engines, because I think, or domestic cars, because they under-engineer everything. So you lose in the performance department in a lot of American vehicles, but they run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not uncommon to get hundreds of thousand miles out of an American vehicle.
Yeah.
I mean, look at my Raptor. That's my second Raptor that I've broke 200,000 miles on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hard. I'm extremely hard on everything I own. So if I own something and vouch for it, and I guarantee you it's a good vehicle.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Scott does the durability testing on
all. They should just hire me.
They really should.
These dealers or these manufacturers should just give me a call and I'll let you know if it handles it. I mean, I'm out towing my 38-foot boat behind my Raptor.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a Power Stroke to tow it with, mm-hmm. but I'd rather be in my Raptor. And so I'm towing a 38-foot cigarette boat behind my Raptor, twin big blocks, triple axle trailer, and I'm towing it up hills and launching it. And I mean, F-150.
Yeah. If it does it, it does it.
It does it.
I guess we'll see how long till my car becomes a boat anchor.
There you go.
Well.
Well, the trick is with German cars, you got to get rid of them before they become the,
I might be too late. We're tracking down issues right now, so I might slowly be becoming a boat anchor at
there
the moment.
There you go.
No, it, whenever I, push it hard, when it reaches a certain RPM, it'll just disable certain cylinders, and I was trying to figure out what it was, because it just, the whole motor becomes unbalanced, and, the car starts to, shake, right. The idle gets all fucked up. So I was like, well, shoot, it's at 100,000 miles. I haven't done spark plugs on this car.
Right.
And that's always something when I buy a new car, if it's used, I should probably just throw spark plugs in it. They're cheap. Right.
Whatever. You don't know when they were replaced last.
So, I bought new spark plugs. The ones that the tuning company recommended since it's stage 2+.
Right.
I pulled out the old spark plugs and I was like, I'm so glad I bought new ones. Those were fucked. They were so bad. So I put the new ones in, took it back out. Ran so much smoother. Right. I could tell immediately. This is amazing. But it would still pop. It would still disable, but it took a little bit more. And I was like, okay. So my dad brought his
coil packs,
OBD2 scanner from work, and it was cylinders 2 and 6. So we went to Brandon's garage. It was so nice out. We just brought a workbench outside and just did it outside. We swapped coils 2 and 6 to just different ones and dropped dad off back home. So the transmission on that has three different modes, just standard for everyday grandma driving.
Right.
And then your sport or manual. And I'll usually just leave it in regular or manual. I'd rarely ever do it in sport because it just revs way further than I usually would. So I did it in drive, swapped the coil packs, was with my dad, ripped it down the road. It was fine. I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. I love my car now again. I don't want to sell it anymore.
Right.
This is fun. So did it again, did another pull, nothing, threw it in manual. It was fine. Dropped him off, came back here, long road here on Sydney Road. So I put it in sport, downshifted to third, and then it just sat at red line for a second and did it again. I'm like, God damn it. So it's cylinder 6 now. So it's either, we're thinking it's bad connections on that coil pack, on the harness. So it could either be the harness or injectors.
Right.
Because it seems to be a common issue with those cars for just those couple problems. It'll just trigger that and do it. So we'll see. I think we're going to try and put some dielectric grease in there and bend a pin or two, stick it in there. And then if it still has an issue, then it's injectors.
Right.
So, because the battery's fine, because the dead battery can, it'll do the same thing on that car.
With a low battery.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's an advantage of the old vehicles too.
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of those fail safes.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think the German cars make a good car when they're new.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just...
Yeah.
You won't catch me in an older one. No, I'm just scared.
When
just
it does work,
them.
It's fun.
Yeah, but, no, when they're working, they're great cars.
But when that happened the first time, now when it pops, I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just turn the car off, turn it back on, clear the code, and then, I know what might the issue be. We're getting there, we're going to figure it out. But the first time it happened, I was with my buddy Tyler, and we were just ripping through the 99 tunnel. And all of a sudden, I lost two cylinders. I didn't know what happened.
Right.
At the time, oh my God, my car literally feels like it's going to explode. And now I know it's not. But it might still explode. Who knows?
Yeah, you don't know.
I don't.
For sure.
All right, we'll see.
Yep.
I don't know. But yeah, the first time that happened, I'm like, I'm going to sell this. I'm going to get a new Miata. Like, I don't. I think you should get a
Lotus, man.
But
I think it's a good appreciating value car. I think you'll be good. It'll be a good spot to park money. Mm-hmm. And you don't have kids. You don't need to haul your friends around. They can drive themselves. It just crosses all the boxes off.
It does. You don't have to deal with them anyway because you're not driving them. Anyway.
Yeah, no. I mean, you don't have to worry about dropping them off. Like, they can buy their own car. I don't know, man. I don't know how you... I mean, Stradman had an Elise. Like, it's the car.
He did. That thing is so much more comfortable for road trips, though. Yeah. Like, driving that for a few hours is, right. like, so much easier than the Miata was. And I can only imagine, like, the Lotus probably for long road trips would have been worse than a Miata, even.
Well, there's no doubt about that the Lotus is not a long... It's not a road trip car, but how often do you road trip?
I drove it to Eastern Washington and stuff. I'm trying to figure out if I want to drive down to Monterey this year. I'm still kind of trying to figure out logistics for that. We already have a house picked out. Jack won't be driving from up here because he'll be in Arizona by then.
Right.
Evgeny might drive down from Canada, so I might ride with him. We'll see. I don't know.
When are you guys going down?
I don't remember. I'd have to pull it up in the camera.
I think we're leaving Wednesday.
Okay.
I think our goal is to stay Thursday night, Friday night, and maybe Saturday night, depending. We might leave Saturday.
Oh, you're not doing the whole week?
No. Okay. I don't need to
be down there the whole week.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
It's just, it's a lot. I mean, I'm doing so much as it is already. Mm-hmm. I just try and pick the highlight type days on... Monterey's amazing, don't get me wrong. It is.
And it's a tax write-off for me this year.
Yeah, for sure. And that's part of how Race Exotics spawned, right? Because originally, Race Exotics stood for Roswarn and Carlson Exotics because we wanted to write off all of our car purchases. And Rob's like, you know, I'm getting too old for this kind of stuff anyways. Well, I'd already bought the domain name because a lot of people are like, why is there only one E? Doesn't make any sense. I'm like, well, I already own the domain name. I already had the Instagram page and everything when I met all the guys, Hattie and Sue Hale and Chris and everybody. So I already had all of this. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, it still works.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's how Race Exotic spawned was a tax write-off for having fun.
Yeah.
And so totally.
Yeah. We'll see. I think we're leaving. I don't know. I think the house is from a Saturday to the next Saturday. So I don't know when we're going to leave. I flew down there last year. I might fly down and then ride back up with someone.
Right. We'll see. Yeah. We flew down last year too. Well, I wasn't even going to go last year. It was because it was like the weekend right after our rally. So I was a little wiped out. Like the rally took a lot.
Yeah.
Like it was stressful making sure everybody was having a good time. From a logistical standpoint. So we were like, screw it. We're not going to go this year. But then Brandon called me last minute. I think he called me Wednesday or Thursday and said,
that had to be a wild phone call.
Yeah. He goes, he said, you coming to Monterey? I'm like, I don't think so. And he's like, you should probably come to Monterey. I go, I don't think he wanted to tell me why, but when I wasn't going to. Yeah, he had to because I wasn't budging.
Do you want
to
film 13 right. Koenigsegg, Scott?
He's like, what if we're going on a drive with Christian von Koenigsegg? I'm like,
I'll be there.
Looking for flights right now.
Yeah.
And so Chris, Sue Hale, and I flew down there. And we found one room. Monterey was sold out at this point, right? Because it was during Monterey. Monterey had already started by the time we're even looking at flights.
That was how I was last year. Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
So I slept on the floor between, I have no problem sleeping on the floor. It doesn't matter to me.
I'm sleeping on the floor next year.
Yeah.
In an Airbnb, a nice Airbnb, but don't care. I'll bring a sleeping bag.
Right. Chris had a bed, Suha had a bed. I slept on the floor. They each gave me a couple pillows. So I had four pillows and I made the best of it. They gave me comforters. So I put a comforter down and.
Well, and when everyone's getting up early and then staying up late, you're staying sleeping at the room or anything. 6 hours.
Exactly. And you're so tired from just all the activities during the day. You're not worried about being comfortable.
No.
You're asleep.
You're out.
So I did the same thing for SEMA only because last minute we went to SEMA last minute as well. And I slept on the floor for that one too. It doesn't bother me.
Shoot. Can Chris flies down and flies back up.
Yeah. Well, I actually fly for free. I'm on a, I probably shouldn't talk too much about it, but so yeah, I've been, I don't know if you've been.
We can cut this out.
Yeah. you don't have to cut it out. I just won't say too much about it, but like, I'm on this program where I get to fly for free. So like we went, the wife and I both do. And so like we went up to Ketchikan for lunch.
I saw the other day. That would have been so much fun.
Like literally I was supposed to go to an auction. I was invited to drive a couple cars across the line and we couldn't find a return flight same day. I was going to fly down morning, drive the couple cars across the block and fly home. I couldn't find a same day flight home and I'm like, screw it. And jokingly, I just was like, you want to go to Ketchikan for lunch? I like just looked at like where they fly and that was one of the locations. I'm like,
yeah,
you want to go to Ketchikan for lunch? I'd never been to Alaska. She had never been to Alaska. She's like, sure. I'm like, really?
Okay.
I guess we're going to Ketchikan. So we like flew up there for lunch, had some fish and chips and flew home. it was pretty ridiculous. But I also did that for the Mullen Museum. This little flying for free thing has been pretty cool.
I imagine, yeah.
I'm really trying to make it help the channel. Like, I've, like, decided that I'm, like, a segment of the channel I want to do is, like, because I'm kind of a boring person. I can own that. I don't have a lot of, like, on-screen personality. And so I'm having to, like, I'm not a vlogger, right? Like, it's just not me to be all cinematic and dramatic and animated on screen. And so for me, I have to figure out a better way to make my videos entertaining. And so kind of what I'm thinking will be a part of the channel will be factory tour type stuff, like more informational, like, hey, this is what these people do. This is what these people do, like more intimate. Like that's what we're doing for Factory 5. That's what we're doing for Hennessy. We're going down to Hamilton Collection. A lot of these, I'm taking advantage of my flying ability to save money on that because I don't think anybody does that because it doesn't pencil out, right? Like, it doesn't make sense to fly across the country to film a little YouTube video on a factory tour when the video is going to make you $50 in monetization money. You just spent... I mean, most flights round trip, you're looking at $600.
Yeah.
So you spend $600 plus hotel, all this stuff to make $50 on YouTube. You know what I mean? So I think that's why nobody's done anything like that before because it just doesn't make sense. But for me, flying for free, I'm like,
you can make it work.
I can make it work. Yeah. Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah. We'll figure it out.
We'll do when a couple at least. But honestly, I'd probably do it for free. Like, even if I wasn't making any money, like it's still going to be fun.
Yeah. And so, you're lucky enough to be in a position. Well, not lucky. You put the work in enough to be in a position.
There is where some you can luck.
Do that. Yeah.
There is
but some the luck. Work you put in also can expand the square footage of the luck.
Totally. Have. Yeah. Right. Well, and like, that's a good thing for people to take away from this. Like people ask me all the time, hey, how'd I get where I'm at? Like that's a pretty common question is like, we'll be at a gas station with our group. All of us like, what do you guys do for a living? Like no pun intended on
Everyone
Daniel Mack,
turns into Daniel but
like,
Mack.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. They genuinely want to know. And they'll like, I love what Daniel Mack did. I think he was, he brought a really cool thing, but I think it would be cooler to dive into it more. Like what we did with Jack Ultramotive is we went up and interviewed him and it was more in depth.
Yeah.
Right. And I think people don't have the attention span for that, but I think you get better. Like, it's one thing to be like, I'm a doctor, or I'm a...
When there's, I sell 70 different types of doctors.
Yeah, or I sell sunflower seeds, right? Or whatever. Like, okay, well, how did you start doing that, right? Like, what were some of the obstacles? Like, what were some of the things... Like, for me, I own a roofing company. It has been hell. Like... Everybody looks at it as like, oh, I'm balling out of control. Like, I've done so good for myself. I should open a roofing company. And it's like, okay, I started roofing when I was 12 years old. First time I was on a roof. Started running crew the second I got a driver's license. The crew was my classmates in school for my dad's buddy's company. I opened a roofing company at 18, which was a very small company. The company wasn't even a company. It was just so that my... that my dad's friend that owned a company didn't have to pay workers' comp and everything. He'd 1099 my business And so that was the only reason I even opened the company. So for the first probably 5 years of my company, it was just a subcontract brand, right? And so it has been extremely hard. Mm-hmm. I'm talking 16-hour days. Like, a lot of the sacrifice that I made, the younger kids nowadays would never make that sacrifice.
Yeah. Well, I think it's not really shown because it's not glamorous either.
It's not.
It's like, I don't know if you know who Alex Hormozi is, but he has like a little quote. Don't need to get too into self-development, but like, he'll say like, the Rocky cut scene is like 5 seconds, five minutes in a movie, and it can be like 5 years in real life.
Totally.
Like, it's...
Well, and I would argue it's 10 years for me.
Yeah. It can be anything. Yeah.
For sure. And so it was fortunate and unfortunate. I opened the company. I was too small to have... I was used to being broke, mm-hmm. right? So when 08 hit, I was only 5 years into business. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have the overhead. I was still a kid. Nobody would have loaned me any money to buy equipment. So I didn't have any overhead at all. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a storefront. And so it was easy for me to weather the storm because I had already been used to working, being broke.
Yeah.
So it was like the same thing. Mm-hmm. I woke up in the middle of the 08 recession, still broke.
Yeah.
Like, nothing changed. Mm-hmm. The big outfits that were used to like doing good, they went out because they didn't know how to operate in a bad economy. Well, it was already a bad economy for me since I started. Yeah. So, no, it's been an interesting like ride mm-hmm. of that. Like, well, like how we brought this up was like, I think it's more interesting to dive into, and that's mm-hmm. where I'm trying to go with the brand.
Yeah.
Like, get more intimate with people. Like, hey, what are some of the things that you went through to mm-hmm. get where you're at? You know what I mean?
I think it's really eye-opening for other people too. Like, when I actually started getting into the car community heavily, I was like also kind of business-minded too. So I'm like, in my head, I was like, I'm going to figure out what everyone's doing and I'm going to just do the same thing. And then it's like, wait a second. No two people are doing the same thing here. Like, this one guy at RTC is doing this and this other dude's doing this. Like, they're not all doing the same thing. I was like, wow, there's no right answer. Like,
well, you got to keep in mind.
Which is a little freeing, too.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, and you have to keep in mind, too, you're talking to, like, I don't know what the percent is of the people you're talking to at these. Like, you know how they say top 1% mm-hmm. or whatever, right? Yeah. But you're talking to a minority of people that are mm-hmm. overly successful.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a great person to talk to. Like, mm-hmm. pick everybody's brain that you can that's in that world, right?
Yeah.
That's one of my biggest advices. Like, when people ask me, hey, how do I get where you're at? I'm like, surround yourself mm-hmm. by those people. Mm-hmm. It will happen naturally.
Yeah.
Like, birds of a feather flock together, straight up. Like, mm-hmm. I 100% believe in that. And sure, in our group, I mean, we have like, what, 20 guys mm-hmm. just shooting from the hip. All of them are, a couple do the same thing.
Yeah.
Couple have car dealers. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, they all do something different. And the way that that's able to happen, I mean, each one of their employees, they're not in the drives, mm-hmm. right? These are like the top successful people in their field that have come together, mm-hmm. right? And so you are going to get a different answer from every one of them.
Yeah.
But I think it's still good to listen to some of the struggles, because one of the biggest things that I hear is like, oh, well, it's so easy for you. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you it's not been.
Yeah, like it is now because it wasn't before.
Yeah, well, and it still is tough.
Yeah.
Like, it's a constant, like, I mean, you got to stay on your A game. I've never had a beer in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, how many people are willing to make that sacrifice, right?
Yeah.
Like, 1% of people?
Probably most of the people
are not willing to make that. And people are like, oh, you can be successful and drink. Sure, mm-hmm. I agree.
You can.
Like, I have a ton of friends that drink and are successful, mm-hmm. but it's an obstacle, mm-hmm. right? And like, there's lots of obstacles along the way. Which ones are tripping you up, right?
Yeah.
So that's a tough one. Like you said, we don't need to go into the self-help too much.
I could talk about it forever.
For sure.
I listen but to it's like an interesting podcast all day.
For sure. Well, and I think it is an interest. People are interested in it, mm-hmm. right? Like, how you got where you're at. Yeah. That is an interesting topic to people. And like, the only reason I brought it up is I'm kind of doing that a little bit mm-hmm. with our channel. We have like a meet the driver type video. Yeah. And that's something we talk about. We dive a little bit further past just that initial, what mm-hmm. do you do for a living? Right. Yeah.
Well, I think, I mean, like, growing up as a kid, like, usually when your parents meet someone new, that tends to be a pretty quick question that gets asked. So yeah. You're just surrounded by, like, oh, this is how you meet people. Like,
right.
What's your name? What do you do for a living? And then, like, if you're a kid and then you see someone with a cool car, like, naturally your mind's going to go there. Like,
right.
How did you get there?
For sure. And the answer, when people say, what do you do for a living? You should just say, work hard.
Yeah.
Right? Hard and smart. Mm-hmm. That's a key, too. Like, it doesn't matter how hard you work if you're dumb with what you're doing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, hard and smart.
Yeah. And efficient, which goes with
smart. Right. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we can cap it off.
Yeah.
I think we've been talking for over an hour.
There you go. That's what you're shooting for, right?
Yeah, I knew it would be easy.
Yeah.
I figured you'd be good at this sort of thing. I mean, there's a lot of
stuff that we didn't even dive into either.
Yeah.
Like, there's tons. So if you need a part two or something.
In the future.
Again. Yeah, we could talk about boats or motorcycles. Oh,
we could. We could.
There's a lot that we could dive into.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Check them out. Where can they find you on social media?
Yeah, I'm starting to like phase out the short content on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So YouTube for long format, if you're interested in long format stuff, and then Instagram for short format type reels and like the kind of the nonsense and more live stuff. We do live stuff every once in a while. So Instagram is like the quick attention span, like, I don't really care what you're doing, but I'll watch for 10 seconds.
For all us teenagers that
right.
have the attention span of a cricket.
Exactly. Yeah. And I try to keep my YouTube videos short too, because I actually have a super short attention span myself.
Yeah.
So like I try not to post anything over 10 minutes. So my YouTube videos are between 5 and 10 minutes because myself, I don't have I watched Jax this morning of his first day on Legends Rally, and it was painful. Mm-hmm. Not because of Jack. I love Jack. I think he does really good at content, or his videos are really good. They're entertaining, but it was just a long time for me to like pay attention to something. Cause like, I'm like,
I want to do something else.
Right.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. So I try and keep my videos short. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's got 5 minutes in them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
well, we'll have everything linked in the description.
Yeah.
This will drop next Tuesday.
Right on.
My scheduled date. So
hopefully I didn't say anything wrong. I don't think I said anything that will get
Fuck around and find out, I guess.
There you go.
I don't know. Jack might be the next guest. We have a couple. I want to get Brandon on here too.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to him yet, but
Brandon's got a lot of experience in this world too. But so does Jack. I mean, there's a ton of people, right?
There's so many.
And we're pretty fortunate here in the Northwest that we have a very vivid, rich community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what inspired this whole series of shirts I made, like the Seattle Skyline one, because I'm proud of being from here.
Yeah.
Like, I know the car community in LA is so much bigger, but I would say ours is better because from what I've noticed of the little bit of traveling I've done down there, like, there's like a lot of like headbutting and ego down there.
Yeah.
Because they know, okay, I don't get along with this guy, I can go hang out with this guy, right? It's such a big community. So they don't respect and cherish what they do have.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas up here in Washington, we don't.
Yeah, everyone knows everyone.
Everyone knows everyone, and everyone gets along,
which
is the bigger point, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that was my point with that, is like, we know there's not just another bunch of people to go hang out with. So we keep our egos at home.
Yeah.
And so we respect each other. We treat each other nice and we help each other. I mean, like, look at what Brandon has done for me. Like, without Brandon, I wouldn't be where I'm at.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, Brandon is like really taken me under his wing. And I have to think that down in LA, there'd be so many other people that like, somebody like Brandon in LA would never have done that. Like, I have to think it's our local community that is so like for each other that does that kind of stuff. So I'm very thankful of the community.
Yeah.
I'm very thankful that I'm from the Northwest and I have zero intentions of leaving it. Like,
I don't either.
Like, I understand why Jack's moving to Arizona. I'm a little bummed that he is because I think he's a great part.
Like, damn it, I'm going to have to take a vacation to Arizona now.
Right.
At some point.
Well, and he'd come on our drives all the time too, and it's awesome having him come out, right? Like, so I'm a little bummed he's leaving. I understand it. And for race exotics, I 100% intend on leaving a car in LA. Because you can't argue with the scene down there.
No.
I mean, that last drive based down there, the base community, they put a little drive together for us, a little get together. That was a last minute thing.
Yeah.
Hattie hit him up and was like, hey, we'll be down there tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do anything? So he like put this drive together, like just for us coming down there last minute. And it was amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was supercars and all kinds. I mean, it was crazy everywhere. Right. Yeah. And that was a Wednesday night.
That was like a Wednesday?
Wednesday night. We had that. It was popping.
It was
and
full.
So like, yeah, I mean, it was full on a Wednesday night. So you can't argue with the car community in LA. Yeah. I mean, that's why they all go there.
Yeah.
That's why DDE's there. I mean, that's why they're all there. But I'm never leaving the Northwest.
Mm-hmm. Like, me neither.
I'll like I said, I'll keep a car down there. That's 100% in my immediate intentions.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep a car down there. Maybe at like 405 Motorsports or something if you guys want an extra car out back. But like I would love to just keep a car down there because I fly for free. So I can hop on a plane.
You can go down there.
Fly down there. Go do something car related. Mm-hmm. Hop on a plane and fly home.
Yeah.
Boom. Weekend trip. Go have some fun. Like, so I plan on having a car down there, but I'll never leave the area.
Yeah.
I like it up here. It's a special area.
It is. It's not.
Don't move here. Any of you guys that are from out, right? We have enough people already.
We do. It's growing way too quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we will catch you guys in the next episode on next Tuesday. With that, we'll see you later. I think that went well.
Yeah.